Parental discretion is advised.
Welcome to this edition of Technology Bites here on 90.1 FM KPFT Houston.
Hooray! Welcome to the show. Welcome to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Dwight.
And he's...
House.
Oh, I didn't hear him.
Groovehouse. Groovehouse.
Groovehouse.
We also didn't hear...
Barrett. Where the hell is Barrett?
On a plane.
I'm on a plane.
Barrett's on a plane.
He's on a boat.
Soon to be on a boat.
Well, Barrett is off gallivanting, so we have no Barrett here tonight. But we had Pete right on time, so it's
There's
weird.
That.
It's weird how that works out.
Coincidence?
I think not. All right, well, thanks for tuning in tonight to Technology Bites. You can visit us online at geekradio.com, geekradio.com, and check out our website, check out the announcements and the podcasts and the photos. We have a geek gathering coming up a week from Friday, which we're looking forward to, I think. Greavehouse, are you a maybe still?
I'm a maybe.
Okay.
I'm a be there.
You're a be there?
Yeah. I'll be there twice because I wasn't there last time.
You're going to stay
so
up late?
Twice.
Are you bringing the booze?
I don't know. I don't know if I'll bring booze. We'll see. We'll see what happens.
Dwight keeps all of his options open.
But I will be there.
Did he say Yamo be there?
Yamo be there.
All right. And also, in addition to the website, you can hang out with us on IRC. We are on the server irc.cuckoo.com, C-U-C-K-O-O.com, in the channel Tech Bites. If you have your own IRC client, just configure it for irc.cuckoo.com and join the channel Tech Bites, pound Tech Bites, or you can go to the website at geekradio.com. We have a Java client, which will allow you to participate in the IRC, the show within a show. Phone number is 713-526-5738. And since Barrett is not here, I need to give out a little piece of news before I forget, provided my email will come up. The internet here is kind of slow.
No.
Yes, in fact, it is. So, the TXRX Labs is holding classes. Come on, load.
Yeah, is this Barrett time?
Yeah, I'm doing Barrett time early to get it out of the way because I'll forget if I try to wait an hour into the show. But TXRX Labs is holding classes to help grow the ranks of makers and do-it-yourselfers here in Houston. They were trying to get the word out. Let's see, the event that they're having, they didn't actually give me any text. Okay, let's see. Hack, bang, open, pry, cut, chop, join, turn, drill, rip, glue, cleave, weld, and so forth. Spring classes at TXRX Labs. All the soldering and Arduino stuff you can stomach. You can visit them on. You can visit them at TXRXLABS.org to find out more / classes to learn more about the classes that are coming up, or you can call them at 832-656-9413, the TXRX Labs. If you just Google search TXRX Labs, you'll find them. Bunch of do-it-yourselfers and open source hardware people and just general all-around good nerds and geeks if you want to go participate with them in doing what they do. That's where Barrett kind of got the Arduino bug from those guys, I think.
He caught it from them.
He did. All right, so that's Barrett time. Thank you very much.
And now for the second half of the show.
Now for the only an hour left. Yeah, no, 2 hours left. Seriously, Dwight, keep up. All right, so...
But it's the second half of the show, so it's only an hour left.
You missed the first 2 hours.
I mean, it's 3 hours?
It's a three-hour-long show.
Oh.
2 and 2 is 4.
Oh.
If there's 2 hours left and it's half the show is left, that means 4.
No wonder I'm so tired.
Yeah, you look a little tired.
I am.
All right. Well, just go back to sleep.
Okay.
All right. So as soon as Flick parts with his iPhone, sorry.
He and his iPhone are one.
He knows when the keyword pops up.
He does?
The keyword pops up, he'll perk up and hit the button.
All right, well, we're going to go to San Antonio and do the Technology Bytes Info Shop because, unlike Barrett, Peter did show up for his job. Good for Peter.
It's the Technology Bytes Info Shop. Technology news and commentary by Peter Hughes. Injected directly into your skull.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, new business models have been popping up lately for internet stuff. Some of you may be familiar with, like, Louis C.K. He did a comedy special. He released it directly to the web, made $1 million off it by going direct, which he made a lot more money even after paying for the facilities and the recording and doing all that stuff than he would have if he had done this for, a TV channel. Well, another person has gone direct to the public in a different way. Now other comedians are following that model. But a new person has come up with theirs, their widely anticipated direct-to-the-public model, and that is K. Rowling of the Harry Potter books. There's a site that developed called Pottermore, which they're beta testing. They have beta test like 1 million beta testers, and it's supposed to go live as far as a community site in April. But they now have released the Harry Potter books all in electronic form, where they're downloadable. They're e-books. And the fascinating thing is they, of course, are coming directly from J.K. Rowling's company, but also the pricing. You know, usually the ebooks, the price they try to get is somewhere fairly comparable to the price for hardback, especially on stuff that's a big deal. You know, unless you really look around, the pricing on all the Harry Potter books are between $8 and $10 for the ebook versions. The books are currently available in English with French, German, Italian, and Spanish versions coming soon. There are enhanced versions on the way, presumably that maybe have extra notes and extra stuff in it. I believe you can get the entire, if you want all the books in one shot, it's under $60. It's around $55. And it all comes directly from there, so the lower price means that means that the author makes good money off of it, and people get a good price, and there ain't no middleman there. So it'll be interesting to see how that one goes. I think that's an experiment that's very likely to be successful. I mean, obviously, it's not going to be some kind of massive bestseller thing like it was, like it was when the books were being released one at a time. But it should have an impact on the ebook market. And given that there's sort of investigations about Apple included, about some of these different companies working together to keep the prices up higher than maybe they should be if the market functioned correctly, This is a nice, I think that the pricing is in a range that makes sense and that, is a fair, you know, fair point in the market. And if you have a Kindle, which you could, you know, then go to Pottermore and buy, you know, buy the books and read them on it. But, one of the things that's kind of, you know, the Kindle Fire, as a matter of fact, they've had another software update, and often with their software updates, apparently new features come online with your existing hardware. So it's kind of like getting a new version, a new Kindle Fire. In this latest version 6.3, where several new features came up, including sharing capabilities that allow users to send favorite passages and notations to other users and to social networking services like Facebook and Twitter. Users can also take advantage of a Shelfari-powered feature, I don't know what that is, Book Extras, that provides access to related content, including character descriptions, information about the author, and frequently used terms. The Silk browser has been optimized to behave like the Kindle reading app, with a reading view that separates text content from the rest of the stuff on a website. Single or multi-page articles can be loaded into a single screen view with an option to toggle back to the traditional view to access the other features, the other website features. Some other new features include print replica textbooks for students, personal document archives stored in the Amazon cloud, and enhancements to Wi-Fi functionality and overall performance. You can get those directly from your Kindle Fire tablet as an automatic download, or you can manually transfer them from the computer via a USB cable. So that one's nice. And soon you can sit in front of your computer and gesture and stuff. There's a new version of Kinect for Windows coming out in May. They are putting the power of voice and gesture controls in the hands of the hoi polloi, according to Engadget. Version 1.5 is coming in May and will bring 10 joint skeletal tracking to let the sensor bar work while users are seated. The update also includes Kinect Studio, an app that allows developers to record, play, and debug clips of users to fine-tune their applications. Additionally, it brings language support for French, Spanish, Italian, and Japanese, plus added support for regional dialects in those languages and English. Lastly, Microsoft is promising a whole slew of new countries around the globe that will be getting Kinect for Windows in May and June. So if you're not in one of those that wasn't listed, or in a country that speaks one of the languages not listed, then now you've got that hope. So soon I hope to walk through a Windows-oriented workplace and see everybody gesturing and speaking out loud like an international Tourette's convention or something. Just because it'll make the working in the enterprise that much more fun, wouldn't it? Too bad they've got where you could sit down, because it'd be funnier if everybody had to stand up to, like, open files on your computer. You had to stand and use the same space as the Xbox Kinect, where it had to be like an 8-foot by 8-foot box, and you couldn't, you know, you had to have that much room. Make your cube bigger. But anyways, no, they've got the sitting down version, so you can be all genteel as you do Kinect type things with your job. For internet, since internet at the station seems to be not very good, maybe we need to find a way to get a hold of a Jetpack MiFi from Verizon. They've announced the price, and this was announced back in January, but Verizon has now confirmed that the LTE capable Jetpack MiFi will be available April 12th for about $50. Now that's on a 2-year contract, and after a $50 mail-in rebate, so you're really going to put out $100. It supports up to 10 Wi-Fi connections. And another big thing with it is it has a removable battery, so you can swap it out you could have multiple that are charged and swap them out, or you can also swap out a higher capacity unit that's double the included one. So you could have both, charge them up, and then you've got one, you know, you've got, more options as far as extending the life of your Mi-Fi. It should be at Verizon stores and Verizon's website initially, and then it'll roll out to Best Buy locations shortly thereafter. Which, this week I read that Best Buy has, I believe that their sales on the cellular stuff, that they are a major player now on cellular phone sales, rivaling the kind of AT&T Verizon size businesses, I guess because they cover everybody, but, that was kind of interesting. And, the Android front, Samsung, and this one's interesting because we talked in the past couple of weeks about screen size, about what size people prefer, what's the biggest size that you can kind of get away with. The Galaxy Note has a 5.3-inch screen, which is, just for reference, an iPhone is like 3.5 inches, so that's a substantially larger screen. I think a lot of people might have trouble like using their thumb and holding it in one hand and touching across the screen. But in the 5 months since the Galaxy Note debuted, they've shipped 5 million units. That's plenty of them, for a supersized frame, and it also has a stylus. But it has not gotten the ice cream sandwich software update. It's still, the sales are pretty big, so it looks like that's fairly successful, and so that may have an influence on what size screens people want to be putting, companies will want to be putting in their devices moving forward. And finally, a couple of Mac-type items. First, the rumory stuff. Intel's next-generation Ivy Bridge processors were supposed to be out in the first quarter, and obviously they haven't made that. But the release dates have now been leaked. According to the alleged leak posted to CPU World, some quad-core parts suitable for the iMac and the MacBook Pro will be available on April 29th, suggesting revised models could be available from Apple in late April or early May. There had been rumors about a refresh on some of these tied to the Ivy Bridge processors that put it sort of earlier in May, but obviously if the processors aren't available, then you can't release. CPU World reported that several higher-end Ivy Bridge-based quad-core processors in both desktop and mobile flavors come out on the 29th. A couple of the Core i5 and Core i7 desktop processors seem likely candidates for updated iMacs. And two of the mobile processors seem a Core i7, two different Core i7 ones, seem like a good fit for 15-inch or 17-inch MacBook Pros. So you're talking about higher-end. A number of the lower-end configurations, including lower-wattage desktop Core i5 processors and dual-core mobile processors used in the 13-inch MacBook Pro, won't ship until June 3rd. Since there's been delays on Ivy Bridge, it's possible Apple may ship some configurations sooner, closer to late April, and then follow up with the other models in early June. Ars Technica had this report. They consider it likely that Apple will wait until all the processors necessary for a given product line are available and then launch them together. So that could mean that new MacBook Pros would be this summer. Waiting until June for MacBook Pros, possibly iMacs, and definitely new Mac Minis. Lower power parts would also be beneficial for rumored slimmer MacBook Pros, which might go for the Air format, from the other from other rumors you've already heard. Finally, the 17-watt low-power dual-core Ivy Bridge processors, which would fit in the MacBook Air, are part of the June batch. So for anybody hoping for a new MacBook Air with a new faster processor, pretty much you have to wait. So, you'll know for sure if Barrett has to get a new MacBook Air in, say, May, that you can count on June, since he seems to be able to pick right before, he seems to be able to purchase right before an Apple refresh. Regardless of strategy, it's likely we'll see a blitz of Apple hardware updates right around the beginning of summer. Tim Cook did promise many more product updates this year when speaking at the iPad 3 unveiling on March the 7th. On a side note, the Sandy Bridge EP Xeons shipped recently, so there actually could be a Mac Pro update well before the other hardware, although you know, there's some rumor that they'll discontinue the Mac Pro altogether, or they may also be waiting to release a new Mac Pro with revised Thunderbolt chipsets before they do that release. So on the Windows and Linux side, because Sandy Bridge does affect those, there will be products to fill with the chips as they become available from Intel, and they presumably would ship them as soon as practical. But the Ultrabook stuff, some of the recently announced Ultrabooks, won't ship until the parts like for the MacBook Air would become available, which would be in June. So in case you've been following all that, that's the update on that based on the rumors. And this one's just an interesting one. iPad users, you know, there's the talk about the sort of the death of the print industry, and maybe this isn't going to save their, you know, this isn't going to save them all, but it's not a bad sign. There's a new report from the analytics firm Destimo, via Business Insider, finds that iPad users are spending upwards of $70,000 a day on magazines and newspapers for their iPads. Excuse me. The report looked at the top 100 newsstand apps in terms of gross sales, finding that iPad users seem willing to pay for newsy content. At the top, it's not unexpected, the New York Times, The Daily, and The New Yorker. Also interesting note, news apps account for 7% of the top 200 grossing apps. So that, you know, that's like games and stuff. So they have 14 slots out of those top 200. The revenue from those apps comes largely at the hand of in-app purchasing. By providing the app for free and charging a subscription, magazines and newspapers seem to have found a revenue stream that customers are willing to support. So this is only 6 months in, so it does seem something promising for the print business, especially as more and more people have tablets. So we'll keep an eye on that market. You know, right after we download all the Harry Potter stuff and, I don't know, get some news content for our iPads. And that's the news.
All right. Yes, go get your Harry Potter on.
It's a lot easier to carry that around to, like, say, take a flight than carrying all the books.
When there's some hullabaloo about her website getting pre-announced by one of her marketing people or somebody, like, blew the...
I vaguely remember something about that.
I think it cost him his job.
Well, I know at the Mighty Houston Chronicle, we loves us our iPad readers. They're an interesting group. They're growing quickly, and they it's a new revenue stream. So we likes it.
You mean the people that pay for the Chronicle through the app,
or if you're a subscriber, you get the app free. If you're a print subscriber, you can get
the app free. Even if you're not a subscriber, you just don't get any content.
Right. Right. For 14 days, you get content, and then it stops flowing. And if you get if you buy the iPad app, we give you the Sunday print edition free. So there's kind of all these different trade-offs for it, where we're trying to figure out kind of what the mix is to get people to switch to the digital. But the people who use the iPad app are just like fiercely loyal. We hear from them, you know, immediately if something goes awry, and they're very opinionated about what they like. But interestingly, their tastes are very similar to print readers. There's one difference. They love my column. My column, when it comes out, is like the first, second, or third most read. If I write about the iPad, it's the first most read, which is really, I think, is pretty good. But
you can tell who's hitting your site from the app?
Yes. Yes.
When do I get those stats? I haven't gotten any stats on anything in a while, by the way. I don't know if that just broke or...
Yeah, I can get you that. No, Apple is who gives us the stats for it. And we get it, as I understand it, a couple of times a day. And it doesn't track the way the web viewers track. It's very different taste. It's really interesting.
Because you get their whole address book with it, right?
We get the address book, all their photos, all their videos. Yeah, it's great. It's a revenue stream.
Yeah, it's a new revenue stream.
Personal newspaper with their photos added in.
That's right.
So How much blowback are you getting on the Meebo thing?
I haven't seen that much. I mean, because you can click down there and turn it off. I haven't seen that much.
No, I've had a handful. But I mean, you can turn it off. But apparently, some web browsers, if you go away from the Chronicle and you come back, it comes back.
Yeah, not in the ones I use.
Yeah, so. Me either. But the problem, I think, is that some people think it installed something on their computer.
Yes, yeah, that's generally the problem with those. The another one that's really annoying is Dig does the same thing across the and I know only six people are left that actually use Dig, but Dig does the same thing where it puts a bar across on every story, and so unless you sign in and tell it to not do it, and then you have to stay signed in order for it to not appear. So it's a real pain, and it's a trend I wish wasn't there, but I don't think it's going away anytime soon.
All right. The phone number here, if you'd like to be on the air with Technology Bites, is 713-526-5738. And we are happy to entertain your calls for the duration of the show. We've got about an hour and a half left of Technology Bites, so if you want to call in and ask a computer question or generally talk to us about stuff, we're available. And Groovehouse is standing by or sitting by. He may be playing solitaire.
but I think we need to clear up and find out if someone's status has changed. Flicted, are you now or have you ever been a brony?
No, I have not tried to watch it. Jay was going to. Though.
All right, here's my brony, my brony tale so far. I have gone in and researched brony so I understand it a little bit better, and I've watched a few short clips. Now, the thing that I've come, and I don't know that I could make a very informed decision on what I've witnessed, but my suspicion at this point is that as a standalone, My Little Pony, Friendship is Magic, it's probably not all that compelling. I think going in and watching it with all of the culture that has evolved around it is what's going to turn the tide one way or the other. I think I kind of tapped into what might be some Afflicted's concern, is because knowing what the culture is around the show, the fear is that I might somehow start to identify with that culture. I don't think there's a way to watch My Little Pony, Friendship is Magic, and either just enjoy it or dislike it. Because watching it, the culture that's built up around it with the brony culture is going to be there. Like, you know, two big horse heads, one on each shoulder, watching it with me.
I think a bottle of Jack Daniels might help, too.
I will say the animation looks pretty good. There was one website I was reading that was going on about how it was encouraging young girls to get tattoos on their butt.
Nice.
So there's apparently some serious blowback on this whole thing from people that also accuse Harry Potter of teaching demonic worship and so forth. So
that's a big help. If you can get those people against you, then more people watch.
Yeah. Didn't Barrett say that he was going to load up My Little Pony on his
apparently Barrett his computer? Only got and on Facebook, Barrett mentioned this. He said that he looked at the cost of downloading the episodes, and then he realized that he was sitting in a middle seat on the overseas flight.
Right.
And that he was worried that if, you know, the people sitting on either side of him watching him watch this might cause a problem, unless they were two little girls, which then would cause its own set of problems. So I have not actually, I did check to see if it was on Netflix. It's not. I could probably YouTube it on my TV, but I haven't done that yet. And not so much out of fear, but I just haven't gotten around to it.
I did watch a few minutes of it because I was, I'm on Verizon, the word Verizon is in front of my face, and so I say it on the news. I'm on AT&T UVerse, and they cluster the channels by
they
type.
Cluster, so there's
all the kids' channels are together, all the news channels. It's kind of nice that way. I mean, if you're looking, you know, Time Warner, I don't know what kind of roulette they used to figure out what channels went next to each other. but as I recall, but so I watched a few minutes of it, and it was basically, you know, I guess the best way I would describe it is it was kind of a Powerpuff Girls-esque, or, you know, in the plot, etc. I didn't see anything that was super compelling to for people to rewatch. Now maybe they have to watch it more to kind of pick that stuff up, but it was just, it was pretty much a well-produced normal cartoon with good voice talent.
It's got Shaggy, right? Doesn't it have Shaggy?
You're thinking
Pete? Did it have Shaggy?
Who's Shaggy?
He's making a reference to
Casey Kasem. Yeah, I hear Casey Kasem's voice.
Yeah. Oh, you people are such losers.
No, we're not.
Shaggy. Every cartoon, you know, has like Shaggy in it, right?
Really?
No.
Every cartoon from the 70s.
No, I think that. No, that's the Houston Astros. Whenever they drop a fly ball, the audience goes "Ruh roh." I think that the thing with My Little Pony that I think it's social cartooning. I don't think the cartoon itself is all that compelling. I think it's the culture around it that either makes it compelling to be a part of or just run away from. But I don't know.
So you're saying the bronies are like the juggalos?
Yes, exactly. In fact, I was suggested that Craig Levati of the Houston Press do an expose or do a story on the Brony movement, a la his story that he did about Four Loko or about the Juggalo movement.
There's probably a Venn diagram to be done.
Now, Craig Levati of the Houston Press, I'll say it, if I invoke his name three times, maybe he'll appear. Craig Levati of the Houston Press did happened to know. He replied to my tweet where I suggested he do this story, and he said, I said he needs to do a thing on the Brony movement, and he knew the term for female fans of the show. And we had talked about that. What is a woman who watches the show, what are they called? And they're called Pegasisters. And Craig Levati of the Houston Press knew this.
I didn't know that.
So
because I would have guessed women that watched it were called mom.
So Pete, did you do
713-526-5738 if you want to interrupt this conversation?
And please do.
Yeah,
Pete, did you do during the news the story about Jeff Bezos and the Apollo 11 rockets?
No, I considered it, but there was kind of a lot of other
this
stuff.
This is too weird. Jeff Bezos, who's the founder of Amazon.com and who at one point, like for 20 minutes, lived in Houston as a kid, is funded an expedition to find the location of the rocket engines from the Saturn V that boosted
the Apollo 11
astronauts on the way to the moon. And he found them on the ocean floor, and he is funding an expedition to go get them. Excellent tweet from Chris Ziegler, who is one of the writers for The Verge. His Twitter handle is ZPower, says, Bezos is going to be like, going to grab the Apollo rocket, BRB. Next thing you know, it launches out of the sea, and he's never seen again. To me, this is like one of the strangest stories.
But doesn't it seem like he waited until James Cameron was at the bottom of the Mariana
Trench? Right, and then James Cameron just went to the 7 miles down in
the Mariana Trench, yeah.
in a coffin-sized submarine.
Right, right. And Jeff Bezos says, "Oh yeah, me too." So,
man, did you see the rocket?
Yeah.
Cameron, did you see the rocket? Was it down there?
So he says that if he brings one up, he'll give it one to NASA, but if it's two,
will it go to Houston, NASA, or are we going to get gypped on this as well?
I think we'll probably get gypped
on this. Okay, fine.
But if he brings up two, he wants the other one to go to the Space Flight Museum in Seattle. But he doesn't know what shape they're in. They've been down there 40 years, but he's found them.
So, hooray. Wow. Everybody's going to the ocean floor. That's where the future is. 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air with us tonight. Wow, the phone lines are surprisingly quiet. I guess it's because Barrett's not here. Okay, more brony talk, I suppose. So I don't think we actually let Flicted answer. Have you
Have you watched anything?
No.
Nothing.
And Groovehouse hadn't watched, right?
Groovehouse wouldn't go near the Beatles link you posted in the.
Yeah, that's right.
I wasn't sure what I was saying.
Like, oh, you're not going to trick me, says the Groovehouse. Yeah, what was the song? It's the My Little
Pony. I Dig a Pony.
I Dig a Pony by the Beatles, yeah. Yeah. It's like, you know, this is, Dwight sent out an email asking if that was going to be the new Technology Bites theme song. And Groovehouse, always suspicious, never trusting anyone. He does not want to be the first one to be sucker punched into the.
I guess he thought I was like going to force him to.
You're
going to
pony roll him.
With the Beatles.
Pony roll. That's the new Rick roll, right? With my Little Pony Magic is Friendship. Friendship is magic. Magic is friendship. All right. 713-526-5738. The phone lines are starting to light up. That is good. This show really thrives and depends upon you, the listener, to call in and help us generate content for the show. And it's always a good thing. So Groovehouse is in the process of screening those calls right now.
Yeah, we got a bunch in all at once.
All at once, yes, of course.
And it's hard for him to talk three times at once. So
he has to call it, let you get your information to him, put you on hold. He has to put two people on hold and wait. So, all right, what we're going to do here is, as soon as he puts that one there, I'm going to grab this call, Groovehouse, since you're screening the other ones. And we're going to say, Matthew, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
Listen, I'd like to know, number one, what is the name and where can I get that song that you open up your show with? That thing that reminds me of the Blade Runner.
It's a song. The original song was written and performed by Weezer. It's a song called Buddy Holly. And this version that we use for our theme song is performed by the Moog Cookbook. M-O-O-G, second word cookbook.
Yeah, I'm familiar with them.
Yeah. It's all done on analog Moog synthesizers.
What's the name of it?
It's called Buddy Holly.
Oh, okay.
By Moog Cookbook. One of their CDs is all like 80s music. And it features songs like The Black Hole Sun and Buddy Holly by Weezer and a few others. They also have one that's all classic rock.
Yeah, I'm going to get that stuck and put it on my ringtone.
All right.
Okay. Have you ever heard of Start Page?
S-T-A-R-T-P-A-G-E. I know that there is a Start Page is what you're... Well, no, I have not. It's a web search tool?
Yeah, it's a search tool, and they claim to be able to... If you do a search on them, they will go to Google, and nobody will be able to trace your URL or anything at all about you, and they will get you the information that you need without leaving any footprint.
It's a private search engine, or they claim to be a private search engine. Yeah, it's an
anonymizer.
It's kind of an anonymizer. I guess it takes your information, it strips it out, goes and search Google for you under their name, and then sends you back the results.
Uh-huh.
Okay?
Is that safe?
Well, I think it's safe to just use Google, but, you know, some people would disagree with that.
I do.
You do?
Yeah.
I don't...
Well, there's some strange things been happening lately.
Yeah?
Like for instance, on Gmail, the new... They update more than Microsoft does these days. And every time lately, I have not been able to find the trace of and the control on my cookies. In the latest, and not only that, every time I go to my Gmail account, this screen pops up that makes it look. You better give me your telephone number or else. If I didn't know how to navigate out it,
and it sounds to me like you might have.
Huh?
You do know what that is?
Yes, the phone number Google has.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Google
yeah.
has instituted what's called two-step authentication or two-factor authentication, in which if you lose your Google password
or Gmail password,
then they have multiple ways to get back to you with a way to reset it. And so what they want your phone number for is if for some reason you let's say for example that you give a work work email address. You're fired from work or you leave work and they kill that email address. If you try to recover your Gmail password and that email address doesn't exist anymore, they have no way to get you a reset. So they want to get your cell phone number so they can text you with the ability to do a password reset. That's what that's for.
Yeah, and it's actually not a bad thing because my bank does the same thing. So when I go to my banking website and from a computer that I've never accessed before, they want to send me an authorization code to prove that it's me. So they can either text it to my phone or send it to my email. So that's what Gmail's doing too. It's just a way of, you know, because we hear from people all the time that they get locked out of their Yahoo or their Hotmail account. They can't get a hold of anybody at Yahoo or Hotmail to help them out. They don't really respond very well to that. This is a way for you to do a password recovery in the event that you get locked out of your Gmail account. Say it got hacked by someone. Someone guessed your password, took over your mail account. You could get it back this way.
Okay. So that is not...
It's not a privacy thing so much.
No.
I guess I got a little paranoid because I've had this the same Google account for... at least about 3 or 4 years. And there's no way I'm ever going to get the password.
Well, this is something...
popping up.
This is something they started doing that's relatively new, and as Jay said, it is a good idea. In terms of the cookies, what browser are you using?
Firefox.
All right. In Firefox, that's in the browser, the control of your cookies. It's not in Gmail itself.
No, I know that. This is a separate thing. I'm talking about in Firefox. It used to be under security, and you could go in there, and if you're getting cookies from somebody that you don't, you know, you could put it in there and block it all together. Mm-hmm. That's not available anymore.
No.
They don't even show me anything at all about cookies in that action section at all.
Well, it may be moved to a different location, but I'm sure that somewhere within Firefox is the ability to...
Disable cookies
or to delete individual ones.
Well, if you find it, I wish you would talk about it on the air, and I sure would appreciate it. Because I couldn't find it. I cannot find it anywhere.
Well, have you tried anything silly like using Google or Start Page to Google search or search disable cookies Firefox?
No, as a matter of fact, no.
enabling and disabling cookies in Firefox is from the support Mozilla page. How do I change cookie settings? Cookies are enabled by default in Firefox. To check the settings...
It's under privacy.
Yeah, it's in the privacy panel. So if you click on the Firefox menu and select preferences and then select the privacy panel, you can use custom settings for history. You can choose whether or not you're going to accept cookies or not.
And you can delete individual cookies.
Yeah, so... Yeah.
It's all okay. It's under privacy.
There. Okay.
So
okay, guys.
It's there.
Again, thank you very much, and I'm going to go out and find this jingle you guys start to show off.
All right. Good luck. Thanks for your call. What I should point out that, am I hanging up on people? I guess I am. All right. So I should point out that a page like Start Page, and I'm looking at their stuff, it could completely be legitimate. Mm-hmm. But there's less known about StartPage than there is about Google, so who knows what they're doing with your data.
Right.
They could be setting themselves... I mean, I'm not saying this is what's happening, but without any real information on who they are or what they're doing, they could be collecting the information as an intermediary and say, you know what, we're going to set up this thing and call it a privacy site, and we'll collect all the IP and information, data information, and we'll sell that to whoever. So I don't know that they may be guarding your privacy from Google, but they may not be protecting your privacy from whatever their plans are. So
the other thing that you hear a lot from people when they get some kind of pop-up that comes from the browser or and it freaks you out, and a lot of people just like close it and they don't pay attention to it, but there may actually be something important there. And even if it may be from spyware or from the browser itself, you want to stop, take a breath, read it carefully, because what we explained here is actually written in pretty plain language on that pop-up in Gmail.
Right. Well, I can understand where he's coming from, though, because right now so much spyware and so much malware comes in the form of what looks to be...
Right, official.
Official.
But if you stop and look at it, you can usually suss it out.
Well... Can you? I mean, I can. You can, but I see people struggle with that all the time. That, you know, that's a very common thing. Where one particular spyware that has been seen a lot lately that comes up and tells you you're having disk drive problems and tells you that you're, it looks like official Windows messages, but saying that you've got a problem with your hard drive, you're about to lose your data, do this, click here. It looks, it's worded really well. It looks really official. How do you know? Unless you are familiar with your operating system and know what the standard messages really are, you know, anybody who's been using a Windows for a long time might realize that that's just not the kind of error message Windows gives you.
When I'm unclear, I take a specific line from the dialog box and Google it.
And with the word scam.
Right, with the word scam.
Sometimes that'll help. Yeah, so it'll tell you, but it can still be tricky finding your way around. And I think it's a good idea that anytime something comes up and is asking you for something as personal as a phone number or contact information or bank information or whatever, definitely read it twice. And a lot of times what I'll do is, you know, I'll get something from my, what appears to be from my bank, and sometimes it is, you know, some kind of notice about something. I'll never click on the link inside of the email. I'll just
go directly
to the site. So, like, if my bank says, we need you to come over here and update something with our privacy policy or something, and I won't click the link in the email. I'll just type in the address for my bank and go there and look for that information, see if it's legit. And I've even emailed the bank before and said, is this from you? Did you really send this? Mm-hmm. You really want me to do that? Because then that'll, you know, and I don't use the contact information out of the email either. I use the contact information from the website. But yeah, be careful. But like Dwight said, read it. Pay attention, because there's, you know, the idea of the spyware is it's designed to kind of trick you, coming in the form of an official message. But the reason that works is because there are actual official messages that need to be paid attention to, and they're counting on you overlooking, you know, just paying attention. So, but do read it. And I'm happy with Gmail to have my cell number, and I'm happy to have a way to recover my account in the event that something should happen. You know, I hear about that. I hear that story all the time from people using webmail or any kind. You know, if you don't have a,
can't get help.
If you have a provider like Comcast or AT&T, you can call their tech support and they can reset your password. You can usually get somebody on the phone, but with free webmail services, it's one of the hardest places to recover your password.
Here's the challenge.
Okay.
See how easy it is to delete an MSN email account, which they still exist. See if you can figure out how to do that. And if you can't, see if you can get help doing it.
To delete one?
Yeah.
Do you believe in deleting old accounts, or do you just abandon them?
I just kind of abandoned them, but I have heard from several people who have tried to figure that out. And there is like a page that explains it, but the instructions send you into kind of this endless loop, at least the last time I looked at it.
Yeah.
And of course, there's no way to get any help for it.
No. All right. Yeah. Call into our show.
They can call into our show, right?
Speaking of calling in at 713-526-5738, it looks like some people have done that. We have more calls in the queue, so we'll go to the Groove House in Tech Byte Central and ask him to tell us who's up next.
All right. Up next, we're going to take David.
David, you're on the air with Technology Bytes.
Okay, here's my question. It's Outlook PST related.
Okay.
And I've mapped a million PSTs over my day, and 99% of the time everything's fine. But I got one now, and I get this occasionally, and I kind of flounder around and kind of figure out how to get it going again usually. But if you click, it's a 2010, but I've also seen this in 2007. If you click on the contacts folder, you see the contacts there. But if you go in and create an email and hit the 2 button, there's nothing in there.
So you hit the 2. Yeah, I've seen that before. I know.
It's very annoying. And I've gone to the website, you know, and there's a couple of ideas about going into the address book and going to the tools options and, you know, adding an address book, or everything is grayed out in there. So I'm at the point now I'm about to just kill the profile, you know, read. A scan PST, I've done the scan PST on the on the PST.
Does the address book only work if you're connected to an Exchange server?
And
that feature, that two feature?
It's not Exchange. It's a, you know, it's a Yahoo BizMail.
Right.
But I mean, what Dwight's asking is, if, is that feature only intended to work with an Exchange server?
Oh, no, no, no. It's not. Got maybe 30 users at this place that I'm supporting, and, you know, 29 of them are working fine.
Oh, gotcha.
I've got this one that's been a problem.
Yeah, I don't know the. I just have to go online to search for that one. I've seen it before in earlier versions of Outlook where there was some problems getting the contact folder because it would default. You'd hit the two and it would default to some kind of empty folder, and you had to change the order of the contact folders. Sometimes I've had luck dragging all the contacts and putting them into the contacts folder.
Yeah, I did that. I exported them, imported them, I copied them over.
No,
well, I can see them in the contact folder, and I can tell, you know, where it's supposed to be pointing. I just can't. There's some registry or some somewhere that.
Is it on an existing profile, or is it a brand new profile that you're setting up?
It's a new profile, new computers.
Hmm.
I can go back to the old machine, and it's there.
So what happens if you go on the old machine? Now, Groovehouse would talk about importing and exporting. If if on the Outlook, instead of grabbing the PST file, what if you exported the contacts to a CSV and then re-imported them in?
I have not tried that.
Because Groovehouse is not into like going and grabbing the actual files and moving it from one computer to another, as he's pointed out in previous episodes. But the import-export, it might be. I wonder if you could just import from... Can you import from PST? I don't think so.
Yeah, I did do that from the machine that was not working. So I went to the contacts and exported the contacts out. I can look at them. And then I went to the place where I believe the address book is pointing to, which is blank. And I imported them, and they all showed up in the contacts. I can see, you know, two sets of contacts now. But when you go into generate a mail... It's just not there.
I'm seeing something that says, like, try this, right-click on the contacts folder, go to the Outlook address book tab if you can, put a tick in the box that show this folder as an email address book.
That's the thing that's grayed out.
It's grayed out?
Yeah.
Have you tried Google searching show this folder as an email address book grayed out to see if anybody else...
Well, I have, and what happens is you get down the path where you have several people complaining about it, but nobody really going,
Yeah, I see that all the time. It's like,
yeah.
I love when you go to discussion forums and somebody says, I'm having this problem with such and such. Do you know how I can fix this? And then somebody will reply, I've never seen that problem, so I don't know what to tell you. And I'm like, what?
I'm having this feeling that when they finally figure it out themselves, they don't take the time to go back and find
out. Oh, yeah, they'll go, never mind.
The answer for the rest of us.
Never mind, I fixed it.
Yeah. They're out of there.
In fact, it said here, I just updated to Windows 7, a clean install, reinstall Office 2007, a restored Outlook PST using each transfer. All emails accounts are present, but all my contact folders are not displayed as address books. And all the contact folders to show this folder as an email address book is grayed out.
Good.
The same poster in the next says, never mind, I found the answer elsewhere in the posts. And so he didn't tell us what he actually found. Let's see, nice to know the Windows E transfer remains broken. You didn't use E transfer, did you?
No.
Well, that's the only thing I could think is to try continue that search. I don't know what the answer is. I haven't seen it. Typically, I open up a PST file, and it's been fine. I've done it, you know, like you have.
Thinking it's a registry. Probably a registry.
If you have contacts in the contacts folder, but they are not accessible when you click the two button, check these settings. Make sure the contact folder is enabled as an email address book.
Right click.
Yeah. If this is grayed out, go to Tools, Email Accounts, and choose View, or change existing directories to add or change existing directories or address book. Is the Outlook address book present? If it isn't listed, add it and close and restart Outlook. If it is listed, then remove it and close and restart Outlook and repeat these steps to add it.
It's not listed, and when you try to add it, it says you've already got one of these. You can't add another one.
If you're using Outlook 2000 and the checkbox is grayed, you'll need to make a new profile as you can't add the address book service due to a bug.
I'm thinking that's my next thing. Kill the profile.
Yeah, start over.
And do another profile. Start over, see what happens.
Yeah. All right, well.
That's kind of where I'm at.
It sounded like a corrupted profile, but it's hard to say. You're not doing any import export. You're just going and grabbing the PST file.
Yeah. Well, I've tried, you know, four or five different avenues there. So, all right. Well, I'm going to try that next, and we'll see. We'll see what that does for me.
All right.
No more bronies, please.
Okay. All right. Thanks for your call.
Thanks.
Bye. All right. I have to. You know.
You can bring it
the limited functions that Barrett does do, he does them so well I never even think about it. Then when he's gone,
you have to do it.
And I have to pick up the Barrett slack. It suddenly seems like he does a lot more than what I thought. Just hanging up on people is a challenge. All right. We are close to that time. We got about a minute and a half before we got to take a short break. So Albert, you're going to please hold on, and we can get to you in the second half of the show. The good news is that we don't have. I guess it's good news. Good news for you is we don't have a Barrett time. So when we get through with a couple of minutes of station business, then we'll be able to take your call and put you right on the air. So we're going to have to ask you to wait for us for just a minute.
And the lines are open.
Yeah, if you want to get in the queue to be in the second half of the show. 713-526-5738 is the number to call. 713-526-KPFT. Caller comment pronounced it with a long O. Moog.
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 Moog. Yeah, I call it Moog.
Yeah, and Pete, it's MiFi, not MeFi.
Whatever.
While we're correcting.
Rock you.
Yeah, rock you.
Which is, actually, I think, if I'm correct.
It is true. It's Moog. I should say Moog.
Yes, and it's Roku.
Roku is also means the number 6 in Japanese, I think.
5.
5?
Or 8.
Oh. We're not sure.
It is a number.
It is a number.
It is a Japanese number, and I forget what number it was.
It is not a number. It is a real man.
All right. Well, we got to get out of here. So we'll be taking a short break. You're listening to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Dwight.
And he's...
Grove House.
Provoking, witty, stylish, and sweepingly informative. The Corporation explores the nature and spectacular rise of the dominant institution of our time. Part film and part movement, The Corporation is transforming audiences and dazzling critics with its insightful and compelling analysis. Taking its status as a legal person to the logical conclusion, the film puts The Corporation on the psychiatrist's couch to ask, what kind of person is it? The Corporation includes interviews with 40 corporate insiders and critics, including Noam Chomsky, Naomi Klein, Milton Friedman, Howard Zinn, Vandana Shiva, and Michael Moore, plus true confessions, case studies, and strategies for change. You can see The Corporation on Saturday, April the 21st, from noon to 2 p.m. at the Rosenberg Library, 2310 Seeley Street, just off Broadway and 24th Street. Presented by Occupy Galveston, KPFT Houston.
KPFT is supported in part by Americans United for Separation of Church and State, a nonpartisan, nonprofit educational organization dedicated to preserving the constitutional principle of church-state separation as the only way to ensure religious freedom for all Americans. Go to auhouston.org or email americansunited.houstonchapter@gmail.com for more information.
All right, welcome back to the show.
It was only 30 seconds.
Okay. Welcome back to Technology Bites. And with Barrett gone, there is no Barrett time, so we apologize for that, or thank you, or you're welcome, I mean. And with that, we're going to go to the phones. So Groovehouse.
Yes.
Who do we have up next?
All right, up next, we're going to take Albert.
Albert, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Greetings, radio gods.
Oh, yes.
Computer gods. I've got my wife having an Apple. She was over on that side of the fence for a while, but she's going back to Windows. And I'm trying to transfer all the files from the Apple to the new Win 7. without using a USB or some sort. And we have a network at home, but I cannot, for the life of me, I cannot see the Apple, the Mac, through Win 7. No matter what I try, I can see the Win 7 from the Mac, but I can't see the other direction.
The Mac can see the Windows 7 computer, but the Windows 7 computer does not see the Mac.
That's right. And what it sees, it does see a Mac with a number on it, but it's not the name of the computer that we've named it.
How old is the Mac? What do you know? What version of OS X it's using?
Yes, it's 10.6. Believe.
All right, that's Snow Leopard, so that's fairly recent.
Yeah, we keep it updated, and it's about three years old total.
Do you have file sharing turned on in it?
Yes, file sharing on both of them. I've really allowed everything that I could possibly think of. And,
on the Mac.
When you went into file sharing, did you click the options? I'm using 10.7, but I think that was on 10.6 also. Mm-hmm. Click the options and make sure that you're sharing files and folders using SMB.
Yes. I saw that on the website, and I clicked that. One thing, we did have a program when we first got the Apple Mac. I bought a program, a commercial software for networking, and I don't remember the name of it. And that seemed to make things pretty seamless between the XP at that point and the Mac. And I don't know if it's just easier just getting a commercial software again. And if so, which one would you recommend?
You should be able to see the two of them pretty easily. There is occasionally a problem, and Pete may have run into this, where you can see it, but you can't connect to it. And what I do when I run into that is you go into your router and look at your in the router, look and see what IP address the Mac has. And you with the network, you come at it with the IP address, and that will use, particularly if you have SMB enabled, and that will usually let you connect to it.
Okay. And the fact that the name we've named the computer XYZ, whatever, but the Win 7 sees a Mac, it sees a Mac that has a...
Right, it says like Mac 129.8765 or something like that, right?
And yeah. I do see that number on the Mac. I recall seeing it somewhere in the diggings. And
what happens when you try to double-click on that?
It just goes into a wait period. Trying to connect, and then it says you're not...
Try coming at it with the IP address.
IP address, okay, yeah. Good, I'll do that. And then the last thing would be Outlook. What's the best way to sync Outlook on a desktop versus a laptop so she's always has the same thing on each one?
the best way I've found to do that. First off, you want to decide which one is going to be always the authoritative, definitely has to have the email one. Usually that would be the desktop since it's kind of always in the same place. That's the one that you set to delete mail after it gets to a certain age. So you tell it to, I guess there's really two ways now. You could either set up your email as IMAP and then you leave your mail on the server. That can be a problem if you're wanting to archive your mail.
Right.
Or if you set it up the POP way, then it gets to what I was talking about, which is you set the desktop to, say, leave the mail on the server for like 2 weeks.
Right.
And the laptop, set it to never delete mail from the server. And then all you have to do is make sure you use the laptop every couple weeks. As long as you're using it on a regular basis, it's going to go get the and launch the email client. It'll get the mail, and it'll have it on both.
But what about the sent items and calendar? We want to be able to
I believe you can set it to blind copy yourself on everything you're sending.
Well, that's kind of a mess.
Yeah.
Well, then you set a filter on the...
One thing you might consider doing is who provides your email? Is it an email account that you're set on staying with?
Yes, so register.com is... Well, actually, hers is Comcast, so...
Because you could conceivably set up your Outlook to do IMAP to a Gmail account.
Okay. She has a Gmail account, but
Dwight?
She doesn't.
Dwight?
What was that? I don't know. Auto-playing video,
okay.
I think.
But you could set up a Gmail. Inflicted might want to chime in on this, but you can set up a Gmail account to... you can even make the Gmail account connect to an existing Comcast account or whatever and pull the mail over, but you could send and receive through the Gmail using IMAP, and then you would have a copy of all your sent items.
Okay, so the, I guess it's probably a shot in the dark then to be able to just hook up or have the laptop sitting there with a wirelessly and just sync the Outlook files.
You're using actual Outlook, right?
Yes.
Well,
the real deal Outlook, yeah.
Well, the other thing you could do, and it probably wouldn't work that well, unless both computers were always, are they both desktop computers?
One's laptop, one's desktop.
So the laptop's going to go traveling, right? It's going to leave the house and send and receive email?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, because you could have a single PST file where everything is written to, on a network share, but that gets kind of messy.
Yeah. There is some commercial software, sync software, but I don't know if you guys know much about it, whether it works as good as they claim.
I don't know that much about it. Since I've switched to Gmail and doing my mail through the web, I've solved all of my problems with having my email all in one location.
Yeah, using the IMAP thing, with the Gmail like Jay's talking about, that means that your smartphone gets the same mail and can see the sent mail. Any other device that you get that can do IMAP will do it. The issue that you run up against with it, which Gmail, you get plenty of capacity, so it shouldn't be a problem, but obviously IMAP, you have to have enough space on the server for your mail, and once you run out of space, then obviously you have to start deleting older stuff.
So it doesn't download. It just downloads headers or whatever.
Well,
it depends how you set it. It can do both. It can have it'll have a local copy. So if you're not connected to the internet, you can see your mail. You just won't get new mail.
I got you. Okay. All right, guys. Well, as usual, y'all are very entertaining and
and sometimes helpful.
And yeah, sometimes
they'll
take it easy.
All right, have a good one. Bye. All right. Jay has to hang up. Okay. 713-526-5738 is the number to call.
Would you like me to hang up?
I don't want to fail in my responsibilities of picking up the Barrett slack, and plus I have no room to complain or deride Barrett if I hand off the responsibility to you.
There you go.
But I could blame you for not having thought of that without asking. I mean, you would have thought.
I just thought.
And I appreciate the offer.
It's all good.
And I said, and that's completely sincere.
Do you have the ability to hang up from in there?
Probably. How do you do it normally?
I just hit the drop button here.
Just once?
Just once.
Huh, okay.
Yeah, drop.
All right.
Drop
if you
the
don't,
call.
If you forget, I'll hit the button.
Oh, no, I like to pretend like I'm a DJ. I'm going to drop some hot track here.
There you go. Wait for the drop.
Yeah, wait for the drop. Goodbye. All right, 713-526-5738, and it is still pronounced Moog. Okay, that comment.
Oh,
yeah.
You ready for that?
You could drop that.
You got it.
You can hang up on that call. All right, 713-526-5738. Call Groovehouse. Put them to work. Who's up next?
All right, up next, we are going to take George.
George, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Oh, good evening, guys. This is a real quick one. As usual, I'm up here in Huntsville, and, I always ask the dumb question, but hopefully it'll help somebody else out there. Ever so often, if I'm browsing any certain web pages or anything, ever so often, I'll get this icon that I've never seen before. It does. It's not, you know, related to anything I'm familiar with, but it'll come up and say that a virus has been found, and I need to take action. And it gives you this little deal at the bottom where it has run, save, or cancel. It won't let you cancel it. The little X that's used up in the upper right hand part of the box, it will never ever let it be, you know, deleted or canceled. So what I usually do is go and open up my security system, which is McAfee, and I'll do a quick scan because it usually takes about 10-15 minutes or so, sometimes less than that, and it'll run a scan and it'll come back and tell me everything is protected, everything is fine. Is that possibly either something or someone trying to find a way into my system for some reason?
It's probably a fake antivirus pop-up that's trying to get you to click it and run their installer and install their fake antivirus spyware on your computer.
Which will pretty much not even be any kind of protection at all, right?
That's correct. There are false alerts, so you're hitting a page or you've got something already on your computer that's throwing this up. I'm surprised that it's only that. Now, when it shows up, how do you get rid of it, or can you get rid of it?
What I usually end up doing when I run the scan, and the scan assures me that everything, and so far, you know, it's been a great, McAfee has been real great, not giving them any pro because they don't pay me a damn thing. But anyway, it usually, I can go back to, what is it called? It's not considered menu. I'm not technology word savvy, but I can actually go down at the bottom where the E for the e-machine or e-pages are open up, and it'll open up a whole line of things that I got, open tabs and everything, and I can go through one by one and close those tabs, and usually it'll disappear, but ever so often it has came right back, like, right, you know, like a bad virus that you've been trying to get rid of, and antibiotics is just not working, but every so often it will come back. I've been trying to figure out a way how to actually stop it, but one friend of mine who is computer savvy, he says sometimes you just can't. They just find a way in, and when you get a certain, when you browse certain pages, it actually will just backdoor itself and come in.
Sometimes that's true. What I would recommend doing is, even though your antivirus is coming back and showing you're secure and seems to be protecting you, I find that a lot of antivirus programs aren't very good at eradicating or eliminating actual spyware, which seems to be have a different classification than technically a virus.
Okay.
So what I recommend that you do is go ahead and give your computer a scan with, there's a program called Malwarebytes, M-A-L-W-A-R-E-B-Y-T-E-S, and we link it on our webpage at Geek Radio.
Okay.
And they offer a free version. If you go and download the program, they have a free version. Now, when you install it, it will ask you if you want to try the commercial version. I always just ignore that and say no, and then let that install that program and make sure you actually install Malwarebytes and not something else that may be presented in an advertisement on their site. Malwarebytes, anti-malware, and scan your system with that. It might find something lurking there that your antivirus is not picking up.
Okay, and then once I do that, do I go back to the McAfee program and then let some kind of way let it know that the malware, that something has been found, or what?
No, there's no real communication between the two programs. So
okay,
if Malwarebytes finds something, it's not going to tell McAfee, and McAfee's not going to have any way of knowing it. You're just using two different tools to kind of attack the problem from two different angles.
Okay, last question, and I'll hang up, and you can answer it on the air.
Okay.
What's a good way to eradicate, if it is something found, if it's spyware or something has been found, what is a good way to eradicate
it? Well, that program's going to give you the option to remove it when it's done.
Oh, okay, okay.
Yeah, once it scans...
Is it like a trial deal for like 30 days or something like that?
No, it's free for, it's free in perpetuity. It will remove it as it finds it. So when you run the scan, it might take an hour or 2 hours if you got a lot of files. It'll scan every file in your system. It'll come back. It'll say, okay, I found these cookies. Do you want to keep them, which you can or cannot get rid of? You can choose. They're usually not a big deal. But it'll come up with some red flags and say virus, Trojan, known threat, and it will say, give you the opportunity to go to the next screen and have it remove everything that it finds.
Okay, and that's Malwarebytes.
Malwarebytes, and I have a link to it on geekradio.com under the Spywares link. If you go to our website, you can find it there.
Sounds great, guys. Y'all have a good night.
All right, thank you for your call.
Bye-bye.
All right, 713-526-573. We had a couple of people call in since while I had that person on there. The satisfying sound of a iPad notification. All right, Groove House.
It's me.
It's me. It's me. It's me. Nice. That's an iPhone notification. That's a joke.
Actually, I've copied those over, those sound files over to my iPad. So now when I get an iMessage notification from my family, I hear it there too, which sounds really weird when my iPhone and my iPad are next to each other.
Do they do it at the same time?
No. There's like a split second separation. So it's like an echo. It's pretty weird.
All right. It's me, Groove House.
Yes.
Who's up next?
All right, up next, we are going to take Cyrus.
Cyrus, you're on the air with Technology Bytes.
Okay, hey, guys. I'm probably going to ask something that's going to sound really trivial, but it's important to me. There's a couple websites, language learning websites, that I use that I guess banned me by IP address for whatever reason. And my question is, what can I do to change my IP address so I can have access to these websites again?
What did you do that caused you to be banned? You're not troll. You're not a troll, are you? Are you?
We don't want to enable a troll.
I cursed in Spanish. That's what I did that got me banned.
Don't do that.
Okay, I'm not going to do it anymore. It is really important to my learning process to use these websites like ShareTalk and stuff.
This out of curiosity, because we have to grill you on this one because we don't like trolls. What caused you to curse in Spanish, and why were they so sensitive to it?
Well, here's what happened. Here's what happened. And I don't use bad language or anything. Actually, cursing in Spanish is a way of practicing your newly acquired vocabulary. In this case, bad vocabulary.
Okay.
But I guess I was baited. Someone took a snapshot of the chat and sent it to the admin and said, hey, look, this guy's cursing. And so I was banned.
Now, see, one thing I like less than trolls are over control of
admins. Yeah.
So I hate them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm not a troll. I'm definitely not a troll.
You could be doing some completely legitimate trolling, you're doing something, and maybe it's a little off kilter, but somebody gets, they do that screen capture and they, this guy's really big.
So you've chosen your explanation wisely.
You have chosen your explanation wisely. So the way that you can get around it. You want to use it ongoing?
Yeah, I don't. I mean, I someone told me about proxy IPs, but seems kind of dangerous.
So where were you when you were
cursing and
doing the chat and cursing and got banned? Were you at home?
I was at home. It's my home. AT&T. Yeah, and apparently,
I've
learned this information is that I have a static IP where it doesn't change. Is that what it's called?
Why would you have a static IP? Because most internet providers don't give a static IP unless you pay extra for it.
That's right. That's right. I have a dynamic IP, right?
Right. Which will change eventually.
So when is it going to change?
If you disconnect your stuff and leave it off for...
You might have to leave it off for a day.
Maybe.
A whole day without the internet?
At least 8 hours.
It depends on how they...
That's absurd. He said that's absurd.
All right, so I'm sorry. What was I thinking?
The other thing he could do is he'd get a low-cost VPN connection.
Or go to Starbucks and see if you can do it from somewhere else other than your home.
Right.
But if you can't do it from anywhere, then it's not your IP they're blocking, it's your account.
No, it's definitely my IP, because I can get in from, like, a Starbucks or other places that provide Wi-Fi.
In that case, you would need to leave your DSL modem off long enough that the lease time would expire, and so the next time you got on, you would get a new IP.
And how long is that?
I don't know what AT&T's
on there, and they actually might assign the lease to your Mac address, so it doesn't matter.
I have a Mac?
What language are you trying to learn?
Two, Spanish, Portuguese.
Okay, let's do the rest of this call in Portuguese. I'll never know. I'll have no way of verifying.
No, I can do it in Spanish. My Portuguese is horrible.
There was I'm trying to remember what this, there's a free VPN software that I use to be able to, watch. I was wanting to watch Hulu or something, while I was in Europe, and they don't show that to American IP addresses. So I used a VPN software, which basically changed my IP because everything went through this proxy, but it was plenty fast. It was fine. I'm just trying to remember what the tool was, so I can't remember what it was.
I've found websites like that, so it's okay.
Now, there are websites that'll do it, that you go to the website and you go through a proxy. I mean, there used to be one called Anonymouse.
Mm-hmm.
But I haven't checked on proxies. I haven't stalked anybody in a while, so.
You can find open proxies that you can use for free. However, if you're going through a proxy, all your traffic's going through a proxy, so anything you enter can be seen by that proxy.
Right. That's what somebody was telling me. That sounds very Orwellian. But otherwise, it's not a big deal. As long as I don't go to my bank account, my investment info, all that stuff, I'm okay.
For the most part, although if your computer is set up and is using, for example, POP or something, it'll actually pass your email username and password in the clear, and so then they could get that and get into your email account.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to find that one that was, if I could find it, what I use. I can't remember what it was called. It was,
There's no way I can get AT&T to just give me a new IP address?
To renew your IP address?
You might actually be able to call them and just ask them to flush. I think you could probably get them to do it.
I don't know if they...
The worst they could tell you is no.
Do they do it via DHCP?
Mm-hmm.
Because if they do, then if you have a... you're probably going to not just have a modem. You're going to have a modem and router, and so mm-hmm. it's going to get the IP.
Here it is.
If you have just a modem and you hook it straight in, your PC straight in, you'll get a different IP. Or you can send a DHCP release and renew and get a different IP. But if it's,
so you mean like connected directly through Ethernet or something?
Well, the thing is, your IP address is being assigned to your modem.
You probably have a combination modem router, not just a modem.
Right. Uh-huh.
And so the modem router is what is using DHCP or whatever to get the IP. So the IP from AT&T is actually on your modem router combo, not on your PC.
And you can't connect your computer directly to the wall jack.
You have to have the modem. Yeah.
Check out a program called Hotspot Shield.
Hotspot Shield.
Yeah, it may have some advertising bundled in it, but it's not horrible. But it is. I used that when I was in Europe to watch Hulu and Netflix online when I was traveling, because it wouldn't deliver it to me to a European IP address. So it basically it's kind of a free VPN, free proxy.
And right.
It's actually legit, and it's your data is safe with them, and it really only reroutes your web-based traffic. Nothing else goes through it. Your email doesn't go through it unless you're doing webmail, but even then.
somebody on IRC mentioned this, and I'll pass it along, even though it's probably not going to be good in this circumstance. If you have access to a server, you can tunnel... SSH, you can tunnel through SSH, so you could actually proxy through a server you have access to, so that your stuff's coming from that system instead of
because when Barrett logs into his VPN to work, he tunnels there, and then he accesses the website. It all appears, even though he's coming from KPFT.
But you don't even have to use VPN; you can just SSH. You can tunnel stuff through SSH. So it's actually encrypted.
Are your eyes glazing
tunnel.
Over,
yes.
Cyrus? Yeah.
Yes. These acronyms are a little.
yeah. Try Hotspot Shield.
I did. I wrote that down, Hotspot Shield. But other than that, another idea that popped in my head was telling AT&T, if they say no, can I say, well, this is so important to me that I might switch to Comcast? You think that'll get them to?
It could.
And that'll certainly get you a new IP address.
Might get you a lower rate, too.
right, but I mean that's what I mean. But it's something where if they don't, I mean, it's something they can do easily, right? But they might deny me because they're trying to get more money out of me.
I don't know that their help desk gets many calls to have their IP address refreshed.
So they don't, because I called and I went through like four different people. Ultimately, the thing they told me was, you pay $15 a month for a static IP address. And then after I hung up is when the idea of, oh, I should have said I'd switch over to Comcast came.
Now, they said you pay $15 a month for a static IP address and they give you one, or they said that you're already paying that?
No, that I would have to pay $15 a month in order to receive a static IP.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. They're not understanding what you're asking for, and they don't get that question very often. So you start talking to one of their front-line tech support monkeys, there you start talking IP address, they're thinking static versus DHCP. Yeah. If he doesn't want what he has now, he must want this. The
exactly what happens.
Yeah, you're going to need an admin or an engineer in the back end that actually has access to the hardware and software that controls the addresses so that they can go in and actually release that IP, like see what your IP is and release it.
Okay.
But I don't know that you're going to be able to get to that one of those people.
Okay, wait, I'm looking online right now. It says, how often does AT&T reset your IP address? And see if the Yahoo question and answers are usually not very good, but let's see. Nope. The person asks, how do I change it? And somebody says, try hide IP software. So, no. It'll reset eventually. Maybe you can just do your interactions with them. And aren't they going to want to ban you if you just show back up anyway?
No, it's not such a tight knit. They're not going to know who's who. It's, okay. I mean, they got like hundreds of thousands, not millions of users. So, it's not like, oh, I show up, they're going to ban me again. I guess.
The other thing you could do is you could get yourself one of those Wi-Fi hotspots, you know, like for your mobile, and, you know, use that.
Or you could search, you know, on wireless and see if any of your neighbors have their Wi-Fi open.
Open, yeah. No, I mean, all those are the first ideas that pop into my head. Those are immediate ideas. But no, I'm just stuck now. My Spanish is taking a huge hit right now. But nonetheless, I'm going to try what you told me. And I'm going to try to program out, and then I guess if that
you need to
work,
use this, though, you probably can swear more convincingly right now, right? Use your frustration and build your Spanish skills.
Should I curse in Spanish right now?
No, do not.
I don't think the FCC would.
You
care.
Will be banned. You will be banned from this show until you get a new IP address. If you do,
go try it at a taco truck in person.
Use your anger. Feel the power coursing through you.
Oh, no. It's a great tool to be able to curse in Spanish, though. It's a great tool.
To know when other people are.
Exactly that, too. But, guys, thanks a lot. I feel like I've taken up way too much time.
It's always been a fun conversation. either I've empowered a troll, or we're going to get some hateful admin some payback.
You definitely are working against these ridiculous admins.
All right.
I'm definitely not a troll. I appreciate your help, guys.
All right. Thanks for your call. Have a good night.
You too.
All right. 713-526-5738 is the number to call. If you'd like to be on the air with us tonight, give us a ring, 713-526-KPFT. We've got one call in the queue, plenty of open lines, and plenty of time left in the program. So, Groovehouse?
Yes.
Who do we have up next?
All right, up next, we're going to take Shahid.
Shahid, you're on the air.
Hey, guys, how you doing?
Good.
I just have a quick question about this new product that I've seen online. Can I say the name of it?
Sure.
Okay. It's a device by PogoPlug, PogoPlug.com.
Mm-hmm.
And they sell three different kinds of those devices, classic, mobile, and I don't know what the third one is. But they say you just buy that device, hook up any storage to it, USB storage, and you can share it through the cloud, your own private cloud, and back up and do all the fancy stuff. So I just want to know if you or anyone of you know that have used it, if they have any feedback about it, what's good, what's bad.
I tried it when it first came out several years ago. I was introduced at CES and got to try one. And it works pretty well. You know, you have to be careful that you have, you know, a strong password on it, that you're able to get into it, and that you set it up correctly so your files are safe. But for the most part, it works as advertised.
Okay. So it does it do an automatic backup of your files from that USB device?
At the time that I used it, it did not. It primarily enabled an online access to your files. In other words, it was like having a drive in the cloud that that you controlled, as opposed to something like Dropbox that someone else controls. If they, I am not familiar if they've added other features since. Mainly what it did was it it provided you a drive that you could write to from anywhere.
Okay. All right, guys. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for your call.
All right.
713-526-5738 is the number to call if you want to be on the air with us tonight. 713-526-KPFT. We've got, looks like a call has come in, but we have open lines and plenty of time. So keep Groove House hopping. 713-526-5738. Groove House.
Yes.
Who's up next?
Up next, we are going to take Ron.
Ron, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good.
My question I have is basically probably an old school question. I'm not too computer savvy, so maybe you can help me out here. I just put a 2 terabyte hard drive in my computer, right? A Windows machine. Matter of fact, it's still running Vista. And I partitioned the drive, so it's now 4 separate drives, pretty much. And then I had 3 additional drives already in the computer. I just want to know how to take the files, you know, the programs from the other drives, and put it on the new drive, so on one of the partitions.
Well, if it's just if it's the application now, with the new drive that you've put into the computer, are you wanting to make that your primary drive?
Not necessarily. Actually, I have one of them solid state drives as the primary.
Okay,
drive.
So you've just added this drive with the idea of using it for storage.
Correct.
Okay. Well, in terms of your installed applications, they cannot easily be moved from one drive to another.
Okay.
Because when you install a program, it references in the registry and with the start icons and so forth, the letter of the drive where the program has been installed. So if it's on your C drive and you try to drag those files and put them on another drive, the program's going to likely stop working properly. So your best option would be, with any of those installed applications, would be to uninstall them,
right?
And then reinstall them, and use the custom install options to choose the drive letter of your new larger drive to install them to.
Okay. Now, what I did before with the other drives that I had, I installed them on a drive that wasn't the main drive, the one that has the operating system on it.
Uh huh.
But still, the main drive got loaded up with, I guess, part of the program, you know.
When you install the program, you have to pay attention to where it's saying it's going to install. But even then, sometimes when it installs, it will install some of the files to the primary hard drive.
Okay, so that's what happened to me then.
Yeah, when you go through the install, if you tell it you want to install this program on a different drive, it'll always suggest the C drive, almost always. When you install a program, it's going to default to the C drive, put it in your program files directory. Now, at that point you choose a different drive, it should install the bulk of the files on the drive you select, but it may have to copy some files into your user profile, or it may have to copy some files into your Windows directory. So it's not going to put all the files there necessarily.
Okay, so that's what happened to me, because actually the solid state drive was only a 60 gig hard drive.
Oh yeah,
and it sort of used that up pretty quick.
If you a lot of Windows itself also lays down extra files, it expands, and it'll put down a swap file, and it'll put down a variety of other things, temporary files that sometimes don't get cleaned up. And, right. and that's what happens. One of the problems, SSDs are very attractive, but because they're so expensive,
yeah.
people are tempted to buy a real small one, and they run into the kind of thing that you are talking about.
Okay. So I guess I got a problem on my hands.
Well, one of the things you can do, there are utilities you can get that will show you, and I don't know the names off the top of my head, but you can do a little Googling and find them. There are little freeware programs that will show you what the larger files are on your hard drive.
WinDirStat.
WinDirStat.
WinDirStat. It's short. It's an abbreviated for Windows Directory Statistics or Stats. It's just WinDirStat. And it's a cool little utility because what it'll do is it will read your whole hard drive and it'll allow you to sort by which folder is using up the most space or which file type is using up the most space. I've found duplicates of like MPEG movies or of image files using this that I forgot were stored off in this other folder and found out what was using up space on my drive with this program. It's free and it's very handy.
The other thing is that Windows also has in its utility a cleanup thing that will clean out temporary files, clean out your browser cache. You know, will simply take out everything that's not necessarily needed, set up files that you don't need, and that can also help. The other thing is that Windows Update, which downloads and installs all your updates, that will add space because it will keep the update files. And then System Restore, which makes periodic checkpoints, will also add if you don't have those assigned somewhere else. So you could, you know, it could be Windows that's giving you the problem and not necessarily.
Okay, now Windows, right, when it does like an update or whatever, mm-hmm. it'll show you all those files. I've seen that, and I wonder if I could get rid of all the older stuff and just take the new stuff with. You know, would that work?
You can go in and remove them, but what happens is if a specific update is causing you problems, you won't be able to back out of it.
Okay.
So it's kind
Which
of
is
the
same not thing always there. An issue, though.
No, it's not always an issue, but there is that risk.
Yeah.
Okay.
And Jay, there's a place in Windows where those backups are held. Where is that when it's in the Windows folder?
You're talking about the backup files. There are all those blue compressed folders for the knowledge base files, and it's probably I look at it all the time, and I go through and I clean out. And I can't remember what folder it's in.
It's not in System 32, is it?
Let's Google it real quick. Location of Windows Update. Backup files. I'm going to try to remember. Where are the Windows Update backup files? There, it's in the system directory. /Windows/System. But yeah, if you let's see, I'm trying to see. It's dicey territory to be messing around in, but you could delete them.
I don't think I should be messing around with that because I wouldn't have a clue, and then I have to call you.
Run the Windows system cleanup, which is in the accessories, and start from there. Start with the simplest things. But you know, you kind of have got yourself in a situation because you really have a drive that's probably too small for what you want to do.
Yeah, and you know, I was thinking about also, adding, like a RAID configuration, maybe but then I think I read somewhere that, you know, even if I was to get a bigger drive, it would only see, right, the 60 gig hard drive.
You're going to try to RAID your solid state drive with something else?
Of the same type, but larger. But from what I understand,
you don't want to RAID two different size drives together. To the best of my knowledge, I mean, it can be done, but you're not.
I was hoping that I could get something bigger, maybe double that, right, and, you know, take it and transfer all one, and then I guess what they call it, mirror it so that it's like, you know.
That's not what RAID is.
Well, RAID is mirror. You can RAID. If you RAID and you mirror, that's RAID 1.
He's talking, though, about, like, making a disk image and taking it off one and putting it on the other.
We could get
but then I was actually going to use them, I guess, in try tandem. To use them both as... But, well, obviously, I don't know what I'm talking about, so I'll let you guys handle it.
Well, I mean, what's your ultimate goal?
My ultimate goal was to not use that main hard drive for, you know, programs and files. I wanted the programs to be, elsewhere, and then use that drive just for the operating system.
Well, why don't you try this? I mean, the simplest solution might be to go through all of your installed applications and uninstall them if they reside on the, look on your C drive, look on that drive, look in your programs directory and see what all you have in there.
Right.
And then go through your add remove programs and uninstall those programs and then get the CD or the DVD or whatever and go back and install it and never choose the easy install. Always choose the custom install that will give you the option, hopefully, depending on the program, of installing it on the other drive.
Right.
Once you remove those programs and make sure they're off the C drive and reinstall them and put them on one of your other alternate drives, that will hopefully sort that problem out. But a 60 gig drive is not terribly large by today's standards.
No, not at all.
But you should be able to use, you should be able to do what you're trying to do, but you're going to have to uninstall the applications and reinstall them and pay attention when you install them to put them over there. And you could, I mean, I don't know if doing a clean install of everything is an option for you, but, you know, if you want to clean up any previous mistakes or messes on that solid state drive, you could start over.
Okay.
But, I mean, I don't know if that's an option for you or not.
Yeah, I think I should just go on ahead and get the Windows 7 machine and start from scratch.
Yeah, it might give you a better place to start, you know, to work from to try to get all this cleaned up. But I wish you a lot of luck. Thanks for your call.
All right, thanks.
Thanks, Ron.
I appreciate it.
Sure.
The other thing is that Windows 7 also is actually a smaller footprint than Vista, and so he would gain a little bit from that if he just went to Windows 7 with a clean install.
That's the problem with solid state is that you do get a lot of bang for your buck in terms of speed, but you don't get much bang for your buck in terms of storage.
Right.
So you're
it's actually a lot better than it used to be. It's now down to about $1 a gigabyte.
No.
Yeah.
$1 a gigabyte, so I could get a 100 gig drive for $100.
Yes.
If they made such a thing.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Look at the prices in the Fry's ad on Friday. It's down to about $1 a gigabyte.
You don't say. All right, 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air with us. We've got about 15 minutes left in the show. I didn't see your gesturating at me. I'm looking here. I see we have a call. What?
What? Nothing. We're ready to go.
Why is Flicked laughing? He's been looking at his phone. Are you chatting with your girlfriend or something?
No.
You've just been staring at your phone all night.
He's hacking on his iPhone.
Have you got some kind of chicken of the VNC installed?
He's doing FaceTime with Katy Perry.
Huh. You don't say.
Didn't take him for a Katy Perry fan.
Well, that's why he's cleaned up.
That explains the new recent head shaving. Groomhouse?
Yes.
Who's up next?
All right, up next, we are going to take Betty.
Betty, you're on the air.
Well, I hope I'm not your worst nightmare because I don't know much about computers at all.
That's okay, neither do we.
You're our best.
I have a wireless, I hope I'm saying this right, a wireless router. And when I first had everything installed, I could do work on it. And if my son-in-law came over and had to do some work, he would just get my password and he could log on and he could work from his computer. Well, for whatever reason, that stopped happening. I could log on, but no one else could. Okay. Now, one of my kids said, well, I'll fix it for you, Mom. So they reinstalled the Netgear, which they didn't need to do, but anyway, they did. Now everybody else can log on but me. I put in the new password. I put in the old password. It will not recognize it. So now I'm hooked to this. I mean, it's no longer a laptop. I'm hooked with a,
you got a leash.
What do you call it, Ethernet or whatever.
Yeah, an Ethernet cable, yeah.
Yeah, and so when I call Suddenlink, they say, call your whatever, you know, so I call Netgear.
They want you to call Netgear to get some support with their product, yes.
Yes, and Netgear says, it's more than 90 days old, so you're going to have to pay for this. Well, I don't even know what to even ask for, because I mean, if I'm connected with those cables, I'm fine.
Right. Well, what you're struggling with is that you're trying to connect with your laptop to the wireless access point of your router.
Correct.
So typically what happens is that, you know, when you set up the router, you set up the wireless access point, you choose what security method you're going to use, and you choose a passphrase so that people can connect to it using
Correct.
That passphrase.
Uh-huh.
I don't know why, you know, whatever has happened is not working, but there's a step in there that you've missed or that you didn't quite get right. And so if you call Netgear, whatever they're going to charge you, they're going to help you go through reconfiguring the router and verifying your settings and then get you connected with your laptop to the router. They're going to charge you whatever they charge you for that. Maybe it's $35. Maybe it's $100. I don't know. I've never had to pay for that support with Netgear, but they have a price for that. So basically, you're just going to describe to them what you're describing to us. I'm trying to connect wirelessly to this device, and can you help me with that? And then they will walk you through the steps of doing it. The other option you have is to get somebody to come over who's technically savvy and break out the instructions and just set it up like it was the first time ever.
Well, see, now that's what she did. Although Netgear told me that it's, I don't know, internal, we didn't need to do that. But that's what she did. And whenever you look and see, like, you know, you see all my neighbors' names and all this kind of stuff, it now has my original, whatever you call it, you know,
SSID.
My little name. But then it also has Netgear, which she just reinstalled. But I can't get it on either one of them. But let me ask you, should I have a problem if I, because this computer has given me lots of problems and it's not that old, should I have a, if it, provided my router is still good, should I have a problem if I were to get like an iPad with getting on this router?
As long as you have the passphrase to get onto the router, the iPad will probably connect easier than anything you've ever seen. Because what will happen is you'll enable the Wi-Fi on the iPad, it will pick up the name of the router, and it will ask you, it'll just pop up a window and say, type in your passphrase. You type in your passphrase, and it just connects right up.
Okay, and should I do that? And if it says the same thing as it said on my computer, it would be Netgear who would be the only people who could help me, right?
Or somebody that you know that knows a little bit about this type of hardware.
If I were you, I'd get the people who came in and messed up your router to fix it again for you. Don't let them get away with this.
Originally, the first person who I started having trouble with was my PC repairman, and he'd always been so good. And I don't know, this past time, whenever I had him check it over, ever since then, I've just really had a problem, and that's whenever nobody could come here and do their work or anything. You know, whenever they were visiting, they couldn't work because they couldn't log on. And then my child fixed it for me. And now I can't log
good.
On, but anyway.
Yeah, that's fixed as far as he's concerned, Nick. Get you off the internet.
That's right. He can now do it. Well, I thank you very much.
I appreciate it. Well, good luck to you. And, okay. Do you live in town? Do you live in Houston?
Kingwood.
Huh? You know, you could probably, unfortunately, to hire somebody who knows what they're doing, it's going to be kind of pricey. I would start with maybe just talking to Netgear and see if they can just go through and get your router reset and have you just reconfigure your laptop to connect to it.
Okay. But you're saying that possibly if I get an iPad, because this computer has given me lots of problems.
I mean, if you are having problems with the computer and if you get an iPad and it connects right up and you can make it, you can determine that it's the laptop that's having the issue, then, yeah, that might tell you something. But it doesn't make any sense to me because you were connecting fine all along. It's just everybody else coming over couldn't connect.
Right. Yeah. Thank you so much again. Have a good evening.
All right, buddy. Thank you for your call. Have a good night.
Okay. Bye-bye.
All right. What's so funny now?
She was pretty savvy.
She was. She was all right.
She was not our worst nightmare.
No.
Definitely not.
Not our worst nightmare. What were you laughing at, Flicked? I always feel like I should be, you know, I just want to be let in. Share with us.
I don't know. I was just laughing at...
everything.
The thought that, you know, it was working for her, but nobody else. And now it's working for everybody else, but not her. But, you know, the people that did that won't fix it to make it work for her.
Something's going on.
Maybe there's something about Betty and the internet that we don't know about.
They don't want grandma on
that
Facebook.
That girl ain't right.
They don't want her on Facebook.
That's it. I tell you what. All right. Groove House.
Yes.
We have another call in the queue.
We do.
We got a few minutes left. We've got one call in the queue. We may or may not be able to take some more calls. It depends on how long this takes. But if you want to take a chance, 713-526-5738. 713-526-KPFT.
Feeling lucky.
Groove House, who's up?
All right. Up next, we're going to take Elliot.
Elliot, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Okay, great. I enjoy your show.
Thank you.
I am supporter to it.
All right.
And let's see. Oh, yeah, you made a reference to Geek Radio Malware Bytes, and I have AVG free antivirus software on a little XP Dell.
Uh-huh.
And I used to run Spyware Doctor on it, but it kind of slowed it down, so when the license came renewed, I just dropped it. But I think some spyware and other little adware stuff is getting through, and it's kind of bogging the machine down because you can see stuff loading up kind of quick in the bottom line. But anyway, I was wondering, AVG free, and then you just download Malware Bytes, and you just run the Malware Bytes. It won't conflict with that, with the AVG free?
No, it will not.
And you have no problem there. Okay, great. Second question, if I may, quickly.
Sure.
What the woman just brought to mind, that a friend of mine brought over, what's that new 5-inch big, huge phone that just came out? Is it?
The Note, the Galaxy Note?
Yeah, thank you. Galaxy mm-hmm. Note. Mm-hmm. It looks like a mini pad instead of a phone. But anyway, a friend of mine came over and he was trying to jump onto my Linksys router, Wi-Fi. And I gave him the password. He could see my name for my system. But he tried entering the password. It wouldn't work. And I'm wondering, was it the phone, or maybe you think it's the Linksys router or something? Because my laptop syncs up just fine to it with the password.
It could be any of the above. I mean, there's you know, without doing some troubleshooting on it, you don't know. Occasionally, I'll see. Is it an older Linksys router?
Yes. Matter of fact, I just on your recommendation on the thing about 3 months ago, I bought the Linksys router. I think it's the E4200.
Yes,
Okay, I bought one of those for my sister about 4 months ago on your recommendation, and it just screams. They run two laptops off it, and, you know, and have no problem with it. And so I went ahead and bought one about 3 weeks ago, and I'm going to replace an older Linksys router that I have that's about 2 years old. It's just a B&G.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was going to load that onto there. And I'm just wondering, maybe it wasn't a router problem. You know,
if the firmware is old and the Note is a very new device, sometimes you need to update the firmware on the router if you've never done that to make it so that it's more compatible with newer devices. But if you're going to get, if you have this new device, you ought to just go ahead and set up the new router and be done with it.
Okay. Is there any website you can recommend? Because every time I don't care how much you pay for electronic stuff, trying to get a hold of a human being so I can walk you through it for 2 minutes, it's like you might as well be finding teeth in a chicken.
The Linksys comes with a CD
right.
that you run, and it will set it up for you. You won't need any help.
Pretty painless.
Yes.
Oh, right. Good. Yes. Yeah, I kind of had my sister up in Austin run hers, and they know less about computers than I do, and they had no problem setting it up. So
it's painless.
Okay.
All right.
Appreciate it, Dwight, and everybody else there.
All right. Thanks for your call, Elliot.
All right, bye, Jay.
Bye. All right, my friend Brian, who is probably the organizer. He's the guy in charge of OniCon, which is the Japanese anime con, has ponied up with a suggestion for a brony to maybe be something we could talk to about the brony movement on the show.
To have a panel?
To be one?
Oh, be on the show.
Or, you know, for us to talk to or interview or ask questions.
He himself is one and would talk to him.
He knows one.
Oh, he knows one.
He knows one. There's apparently somebody here in Houston who is like the
guy. Is his name Alex?
His name is Dos Grego.
Oh, not his pony name, his real name.
I don't know. I got a tweet from Brian on Twitter.
He's got a hookup for it.
Who's apparently listening and heard the Brody conversation. And then I put one and one together, and it came up with, oh, yeah, the Onicon guy, who's very, very good to us about, like, inviting us to come to Onicon, be a part of this. Perhaps we could go on some kind of, maybe it'll become BronyCon. I don't know.
It's Onicon. Awfully close.
A BR, you're only a BR away from Fat Finger. But what?
We had a caller comment, Colin, say that a lot of these laptops have the Wi-Fi switch on the side. Mm-hmm. Betty may have that switch turned off.
Like she may actually have her wireless turn. No, she says she sees the Wi-Fi access points.
You can see them, but if you on the Dells, they have that switch.
Well, they do have the on-off switch. I mean, maybe she turned her Wi-Fi off and all of that.
Look for a switch on the side, Betty. There might be a little switch that turns your Wi-Fi off and on.
But going back to the Brony conversation, thanks for that to the commenter who called in with that. I got this tweet. It says, you should get with Dos Grego on the topic of bronies and then pound brohoof. Was the hashtag. And then I asked him, is he the
bro hoof.
So I asked Brian on Twitter, I said, is he the go-to guy for the brony movement? And he says, of every pony I know, he's your guy. So, and then he just said, and then he had the brony hoof thing in a little text. I'll have to show it to you, but
he should come to the Geek Gathering.
Yeah, maybe we could get a Brony representation at the Geek Gathering a week from Friday. So, Brian, if you're still listening, we're ready.
Brony up.
Is it on iTunes so we can, like, watch it on our iPads on iTunes?
I think there's YouTube clips galore.
Oh, all right.
All right. Well, thanks for tuning in, everyone. And we hope that Barrett is traveling safe, the friendly skies. We're anticipating at least one horror story. This is the guy that drops his phone and loses keys off of his keyboard pretty regularly. And when it comes to airports, it's usually lost luggage. So pray for Barrett's luggage to be safe. And I think he'll be back next week. I think he's only gone for a handful of days. So hopefully we'll be back to full strength when we return next week. The Geek Gathering is a week from Friday. Go online, check it out. Come join us. All right, we're going to get out of here. You've been listening to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Dwight.
And he's
Groovehouse.
Texas Music Series proudly presents Country Music Hall of Fame and Artist in Residence Connie Smith performing at the historic Crichton Theatre on Saturday, April the 7th, 2012. With Americana Roots Music Renaissance Man and Country Music Hall of Fame legend Marty Stewart to open. Connie Smith is a highly celebrated all-American country music artist and songwriter. She is widely considered to be one of the genre's best female vocalists of all time. She has earned 11 Grammy Award nominations, 20 top 10 Billboard country singles, and 31 charting albums, three of which have hit number one. Don't miss Connie Smith on tour promoting her newly released and critically acclaimed CD, Long Line of Heartaches. For tickets, go to crichtontheatre.org or call 936-441-SHOW, 7469, extension 201. This is KPFT Houston.
Democracy Now! Host Amy Goodman will headline a community justice conference in Houston Saturday, March 31st. Civil rights issues in the 21st century will drive discussion at the event on the Houston Community College West Loop campus. Immigrants' rights, post-9/11, civil liberties, and criminal law reform are the focus. Join with the Civil Rights Coalition on March 31st and be part of the conversation. To register, visit civilrightscoalition.net. And on Saturday evening, beginning at 6 p.m., Amy Goodman will join you and a select few KPFT members for an intimate evening of dining and discussion. Tickets for the exclusive dinner and discussion are on sale at kpft.org. That's kpft.org. This is commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio. Twitter.com/KPFT, Facebook.com/KPFT Houston.
Another ethical vegan.